UFOs are well and truly back in the news. What on earth is it that US Navy pilots have seen on their radars moving with incredible speed and performing impossible seeming manoeuvres in the sky? Barack Obama, as Josie Pagani mentioned earlier, said a few days back on the Late Late Show with James Corden that we don't know what they are. We can't explain how they move. There is a highly anticipated US government report about to be released from the Pentagon in conjunction with the Senate Intelligence Committee, and its leaked conclusions are in media already. It doesn't find, apparently, that unexplained aerial phenomena are alien spacecraft, but it also doesn't conclude they aren't. Russia and China are known to be experimenting with hypersonic technology to produce weapons and craft that can move at five times the speed of sound. Joining us is Dr. Seth Shostak. Seth's the senior astronomer and director at the Center for the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, SETI, in California. He's also the man who said he'd buy whichever audience he was talking to at the time a cup of coffee if there isn't an ET event by 2036. Seth Shostak studied physics at Princeton and astronomy at Caltech before working with radio telescopes. He's the host of SETI's Big Picture Science podcast, and he's written four books on astronomy and technology. Hello, Seth.
Well, hello to you, Jim.
Aliens in the sky, Seth. Do you kind of secretly want to believe?
Well, there are many things I'd like to believe. If I thought there really were aliens in the sky, you may detect a bit of skepticism there. But if I really thought there were aliens in the sky, I would probably find my job a lot easier.
Well, that's right. And can I ask you a bit about your job before we go back to the aliens? One night in 1968 at an observatory in the Sierra Nevadas, all by yourself, you realised that the antennas you were using to measure the spins of galaxies could also be used to communicate, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I was sitting there all alone, which was typical for students, at the observatory in the middle of the desert at 3 a.m. And all I hear is the grinding of the motors of the telescopes, the radio telescopes, as they pan across the sky. And I'm reading this book about the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. And it says in that book, you know, if you could have some big antennas and point them at the sky, you might be the first to find ET. Well, there I was. And I thought, gee, that's an interesting idea.
And I think we know quite a lot about SETI, most of us, because of the treatment in movies and also having read over the years. But you've heard nothing so far. But I think you think things will change.
Well, I certainly do. Today, we can do things at least 10 times better, and in many cases, a million times better.
Because of computing power, basically.
Yes. Yes. I don't know whether the general public appreciates that. Many of them do have some idea of how SETI operates. They may have seen the movie Contact, right? And we use these big antennas and we point them at some nearby stars and hope to eavesdrop on, you know, radio Klingon or something of that order. And we haven't heard anything. That's quite right. But I do believe that in the next, say, dozen years, we will pick up some indication that, you know, we're not the only game in town, that there are clever beings beyond our solar system.
Because you can hunt far faster and farther now than you ever could.
That's right. It's a fact that the speed of the search is determined simply by what kind of computer you have or how fast your computer is, I should say. And indeed, you know, computers, I mean, I'm sitting here in the Silicon Valley, Jim. So, you know, within 5 miles of where I'm sitting, they're designing all the new chips that will be in the computers 5 years from now, whatever. So compute power today is just doubling every couple of years. And that means the speed of our search for ET is also doubling in speed every couple of years. To begin with, the fastest computers for doing SETI, it turns out, are based on hardware that's designed for video games. If you want to know where the fastest computers in the world are, just go down to your local video game store. There you'll find them. I don't know. Maybe the military has something faster. But honestly, I think they probably just use the same chips that are used for, you know, Grand Theft Auto and stuff like that.
Seth, could those fantastic antennas you've just been talking about even now be pointed in the wrong direction, though, or be using the wrong frequencies? Could it be that?
Yes, it could very well be that. Maybe we're tuned to the wrong spot on the dial. Maybe there are no aliens. That I find a bit radical, but people have suggested that. Or maybe we just don't have enough sensitivity. And yeah, there are plenty of transmitters out there, but our receiving setups simply not yet good enough to pick them up. Radio is not just a fad of the moment, right? Any more than the invention of the wheel or fire or any of these very fundamental discoveries were just fads. Yes, what you may hear on the radio will probably change in another whatever years. 1,000 years from now, you might not have top 40 stations, but what you will have is the use of radio, because it's just nature. It's a quick way of sending bits of information from one place to another. So we assume the aliens are using radio no matter what they're using it for. I think they will use radio in the same way that I would speculate that any advanced society would use, well, the wheel, right? I mean, yeah. Maybe they don't. It's possible that all their cars might have legs. It's possible. but I think the wheel is, such an obvious thing. And the same with radio, and particularly high-frequency radio, and also for radar. Those are all at high frequencies. And those are the frequencies we'd look at with these antennas.
Yeah. But one more general question before we start talking about Tic Tac spacecraft and such. With a star, if the planets around it are billions of years older than our own solar system, for example, it seems plausible that there are species that have grown very intelligent, and they might be messing with our heads when the Navy pilots see inexplicable craft.
I actually don't think it's terribly plausible, but I grant you, Jim, that it's certainly possible. I mean, it doesn't violate any physics, but it does make certain assumptions about, what the aliens find worthwhile to do. Where do they want to spend their intergalactic cruceros? Teasing our Top Guns doesn't seem to me to be one of the possibilities there. But having said that, you have to look at it. It could be.
I mean, what could the USS Princeton have been tracking in the sky? 8 or 10 mysterious flying objects, as you know, near Catalina Island off California. Because we've got enough knowledge, Seth, don't we, of meteors and atmospherics by now, surely, to ascribe these sorts of sightings to mundane phenomena if these phenomena exist.
Well, the phenomena certainly exist. Radar is, it is susceptible, for example, to the changes in the temperature of the atmosphere, the layers of the atmosphere. For example, Southern California, Los Angeles and that area, the higher up you go, the warmer it gets for a while. That's generally not the case. Normally when you climb a mountain, it gets colder as you go higher. But, if you have this temperature inversion, for example, that can wreak a certain amount of havoc with radar. But there are many other things that can wreak havoc with radar. Hey, you might have big flocks of birds. You might just have something wrong with your radar set. That happens too. I mean, radar is, it's reliable, but it's in a sense no more reliable than, standing on the deck of a ship and using a good pair of binoculars. You might see things that aren't actually what you believe them to be. And the same is true with radar. You can be confused by radar. It happens all the time. So far, we haven't started a war because of it. Reports like this go all the way back to the 1950s. They were then investigated by the United States Air Force. You don't want to set up these fighter jets and have them collide with a Klingon, battle cruiser or something like that. They want to know. And more directly, maybe these are Soviet craft, maybe they're Chinese craft. They need to know that sort of thing. So it's not surprising that the military has investigated this, but they've done that before. And there have been maybe 4 or 5 reports. And these reports were pretty good. I mean, the people involved were, academics, real experts on this sort of stuff. And the reports basically, Jim, they all said the same thing. Namely, that 90% of the incidents that were reported, we can understand in terms of known natural phenomena, birds or balloons or other aircraft or whatever, a whole list. 10% we can't understand.
You mentioned tricks that can be played on radar, if you like. That's one thing. But tricks that can be played on the eye is another. And there have been enough of those, sometimes actually observed by professionals like pilots, that they have intrigued us mightily over the years too. And that must be the case with you as well.
It's true. And they may talk about it. Maybe they don't talk about it. But if they do talk about it, all they say is, I saw this thing in the sky, and it was, you know, just hanging there in space, or it was darting around like a firefly, you know, 3 feet in front of my head, or something like that. And what you find happens is that these sorts of reports get treated much more seriously than if your next door neighbor said it, particularly after evening cocktail hour, right? Because this is somebody who's a serious person. They're a commercial airline pilot. They're a military pilot. They're, you know, they're trained observers one way or the other. And you think, well, they're not going to lie. So I guess this means the aliens are here.
You're not far away from looking at a million star systems, I was reading, which is correct, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. And alien civilizations, you say, would know about our existence only if they were within about 35 light years of Earth. Basically because it takes a long time for Johnny B. Goode by Chuck Berry to be appreciated across the galaxy, Seth.
Yes, that's true. Actually, that's the farthest away they could be for there to have been enough time for Johnny B. Goode to get to them and for them to get a response back here. So, yes.
All right. So your opinion is that they simply won't know about us yet, in all probability.
I don't think I think that that's the correct interpretation from my point of view. Look, if any star system beyond 35 light years doesn't know about Homo sapiens, then there isn't too much incentive for them to come here and tease us or challenge us or abduct us or any of that sort of stuff. And within 35 light years of Earth, I mean, you know, there may be a couple of dozen stars. That's about the right number. And you know, the probability that in a sample of a couple of dozen stars, you also have a world with intelligent beings on it sounds to me like a pretty much a long shot.
I guess so. So the audiences you've talked to over the years, you must have heard a lot of feedback from them, you know, with your cup of coffee wager and so on. So you nevertheless believe that within the not too distant future, I mean, 2036 isn't far away, we will know, or we will have had a kind of ET type encounter. That's the bet you've made.
It is that the equipment being used for SETI is getting much better very quickly, so that, you know, we will by that date have looked at roughly a million star systems. And it just seems to me that if you look at a million star systems, you might trip across something. Now, I may still have to buy a lot of flat whites, but it's still my contention that's a, you know, that's a reasonable expectation.
So your bet is really about getting to know with far more certainty about the presence of intelligent life. We're, more broadly, we are going to refine that in terms of our expertise pretty quickly too.
I think so. At least you'll know there's somebody out there, and at some level, that does change your life.
Oh, yeah. Yes, many levels. Seth Shostak is with us, a senior astronomer and director at the Center for the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, SETI, in California. Your former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid told the New York Times he had become increasingly interested in UFOs, although his staff warned him not to engage with the notion publicly. He helped secure funding for the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. Seth, he reckons there's information your governments have uncovered that can be disclosed to the public without harming our national security, and some of the truth will soon be out there. We're just wondering how much truth that is, really.
I think from the standpoint of the military, the question is, are any of these consistent with, you know, devices being flown by putative enemies like China or the Soviet Union, or, well, the former Soviet Union, Russia? I mean, are these enemy craft, right?
If they are enemy craft, then one of the countries on planet Earth has so much technology, you may as well ditch all your aircraft carriers, really, though.
Yes, we should invest more in the State Department and try and negotiate.
I don't really want to get into Roswell and Area 51 and all the various, and sometimes on the face of it, you know, plausible close encounters over the years, or into ley lines and such. But Seth, are there incidents over the years that have kind of stopped you in your tracks and made you think, actually, They might be flying above us. They might have visited. They might be among us or whatever after all.
Well, just as a short background, I get emails and phone calls essentially every day, Jim, from people who have seen something or have experienced something, and they want to tell me about it. And I ask them to send videos and photos if they have any, and sometimes they do. In fact, maybe half the time they do. And I've never seen anything where I thought, this is it. I must say, I've been intrigued by a few. I've never heard anything where I thought, this is worthy of, you know, following up.
Even the sightings, you know, where pilots, not that I've ever spoken to them personally, are purported to have looked out the right-hand side of the cockpit and seen a kind of cigar shape and say on, you know, the radio or the intercom to their fellow pilots, gee, what on earth is that? That kind of report that we're probably all familiar with. So even that doesn't really intrigue you that much?
Well, I don't think so, because there are all sorts of, if you will, prosaic explanations that might account for these reports. And again, you've got to be careful not to say, well, these are trained pilots, and consequently, this must be something very, very unusual. Pilots are actually trained to recognize other aircraft. That's what they're good at. And if they see a blimp or a balloon of some sort, you know, they may not recognize it. There's something called, what is it called? A helikite, I think. Helikite. It's a combination of helicopter and kite. It has kind of a triangular shape and can go up to extraordinarily high altitudes. And there's a video on the web these days, you know, that seems to show a triangular shape. And people are saying, you know, doggone it, these pilots said they saw this thing. It must be E.T. Well, maybe, but it could have been also one of these helikites. I don't know. There's always some explanation.
As you say, why would advanced aliens start sparring with Top Gun pilots? But on the other hand, it might make sense that a superior species, Seth, might study us before revealing themselves. It might even make sense that they might tantalize us in advance of a reveal so it wouldn't be an absolute traumatic shock when it finally came.
Well, I suppose that's possible. It doesn't seem to me to make a lot of sense to say that, well, they're just checking us out before revealing themselves. Did we do that when the Europeans started coming to the Americas in the early 1500s? Did they stand around and kind of study the Aztecs for a while before walking in? I don't remember them doing that.
So to sum up, whatever is being seen in the sky by pilots or whomever, Seth, it is still beyond our ken, isn't it? We don't understand it. I suppose that's the bottom line.
Well, I think in many cases they are indeed still puzzling. But to jump to the conclusion that because it's puzzling, it's also extraterrestrial, that's the dangerous step.
I'm going to get ufologists galore saying you should have asked Seth this and that about whatever sighting or whatever aspect of science or observation. But I will ask you this finally, because you are at SETI. It is the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. And my goodness, you must have talked with your colleagues a lot about this over the years. So if you were all wagering men and women, what side of the ledger would you be on whether there are aliens out there or not?
I think they all believe that there's something out there. I mean, you know, it's just a numbers game, right? The number of planets in the Milky Way is like a trillion. And we can see 2 trillion other galaxies, each with 1 trillion planets. I mean, these numbers are so beyond ordinary ken. There are more planets out there than there are grains of sand on all the beaches of Earth, as, you know, people like to say. That's true.
Whatever we find, we'll actually one day take our breath away. We'll find stuff that will just dazzle us, whatever it is.
Exactly right. And that discovery will be the kind of discovery that can be verified by other people.
Hey, lovely to talk with you. Thank you very much for giving us your time, Seth.
Not at all, James. It's been my pleasure.
Seth Shostak at SETI.